Welcome back to the Relational Grace Podcast, where we share the teachings of Pastor Nick Harris, who taught us that Christianity is not a religion, it's a relationship. I'm Jamie Russell, Pastor Harris's son. In this series of sermons on the life and times of Elijah, we saw how a man known as Elijah the Tishbite appeared before the king of Israel, Ahab ben Omri, bringing a very simple message. He said, "It ain't gonna rain no more. Not until I say so." And then the prophet disappeared for the next 3.5 years. For that entire period of time, God himself protected this man from the wrath of the powers that be. First, God took Elijah to a cave in the region known as Transjordan, where God took care of his needs. Then, after a year of hiding, God sent him to live in the house of a widow in the region of Phoenicia. God not only protected Elijah in these out-of-the-way places, he also miraculously fed him. While Elijah was hidden away in a cave in Transjordan, God sent him bread and meat in the beaks of wild ravens. And while he was hiding in Phoenicia, God provided him with cornbread baked for meal that came from a barrel that refused to remain empty, and oil from a cruse that refused to run dry. So, in comparison to everybody else in the Middle East at that time, Elijah enjoyed a relatively comfortable existence for 42 long months. Then one day God spoke to Elijah again. He told the prophet to come out of hiding, to leave Phoenicia, and to go show himself to Ahab. Now please understand this. Leaving his hiding place was a dangerous thing for Elijah to do, and he knew it. But the ever-obedient Elijah did as he was told. And what happens from here on in this story is utterly fascinating. Three types of characters emerge for the text in this episode, and all of these people involved had different agendas and opposing goals. In this teaching, Pastor Harris will introduce us to these people. So with that introduction, let's dive into the fifth teaching of the Courage and Confrontation series titled Believers and Bystanders.
I have a book in my library. I've had it for, oh my goodness, a lot of years, probably from First Church days. It was written by Chuck Colson. Now, most of you remember Chuck Colson, involved in Watergate. Not one of the really good guys during that period, by his own admission. And he was just, you could just put a label around him during that time. He was President Nixon's hatchet man, so he didn't belong to the good guys. I can assure you of that. But now, when I bought this little book, and I begin to read it, I don't think of anything I've ever read in my life that helped me identify and understand the characters that Tim mentioned this morning as clearly as this little book did. Now, let me tell you about this book. In its pages, Colson suggests that there are really only three kinds of people in the world. Colson says there are believers in Christ, there are bystanders, and then there are what Colson labels as the bad guys. And he openly admits that for much of his life, he belonged in that latter category as a bad guy. Now, I don't have to explain the bad guys, do I? They're just mean-spirited people. They don't care anything for God or for other people. And they're this way for a reason, and that's because they're just totally self-centered. They're wrapped up in me, myself, and I, and that's it. Now, the bad guys in our text for today, you don't have to guess who they are. It's the wicked King Ahab and his equally wicked queen, Jezebel. Now, as the great James Cagney once said, these two people were dirty rats. Okay? I mean, they were really dirty rats. And like all bad guys, they cared nothing for God. They cared nothing for the things of God. But you say, Pastor, if Ahab and Jezebel were the bad guys, then what about the believer and the bystander? Well, you've probably guessed already that the believer in the story is the prophet Elijah. But now here's what's odd about that. If you and I had been living in the 9th century B.C., we probably would not have seen Elijah as being the good guy. As a matter of fact, we might have been among a multitude of people who cursed him every day with every breath. Why so? Well, because the state-owned media, the NBCs, the CBSs, the ABCs, the CNNs, and the MSNBCs, would have done a job on us every day. They would have brainwashed us. They would have led us to believe that it was Elijah's fault that it hadn't rained in Israel for 42 long months. So they painted him, I'm sure, as the bad guy in all of this. In fact, I think they probably suggested that Elijah deserved to die for being so complicit in this drought. Now, I'm afraid to say that you and I may have bought into the lie that these people were propounding. Now, we would have said, yep, Elijah's the guilty party. He's the one that brought this famine on the land. And we would have laughed at the idea that it had anything to do with our flirtation with demonic gods. Now, as I look at this, it seems odd to me, beloved, especially when I read our text for today, because it appears that no one really blamed the idolatrous and immoral king and queen, Ahab and Jezebel. There's no public outcry against them. The only outcry is against poor old Elijah. And this too is odd because it was the two of them who had first opened the hearts of the people of Israel to the worship of the demonic god Baal. It wasn't Elijah who did that. Elijah had no part in that. You see, everybody thought the bad guys were the good guys and that the good guy was the bad guy. In fact, they blamed one of the only true believers in all of Israel, Elijah the Tishbite, for all the problems they faced. So we might have joined the majority of people living in the state of Israel at that time who thought this man Elijah was the bad man in our story. The famine had nothing to do with our beloved king and queen. Why? What do you mean? Look at how gorgeous she is. How could she do anything wrong? Why, this woman is beautiful. And our king is brilliant. Hello? They would simply say, those two poor people, our king and queen, we've got to stand behind them because they're the victims of a vicious attack from a religious fanatic. Well, Elijah, he's getting all the blame heaped upon him. It's he who brought all of this. He brought all the trouble upon Israel. And so what do they want? They want him to die. But as much as the common people wanted him dead, Ahab and Jezebel wanted him dead more. They wanted him killed on the spot. They didn't want to try him. They didn't want to arrest him. They didn't want any part. They just wanted him dead. Now, Elijah is not stupid. He's fully aware of the feelings of King Ahab, and he wants to stay as far away from King Ahab as he can possibly stay. But then out of nowhere, what does God do? God speaks to Elijah, and he has the audacity to say to him, go show yourself to Ahab. Now listen to me. If I had been in Elijah's sandals, and God had said to me, go show yourself to Ahab, I'd have said something like this to God. God, that's not really a good idea. As a matter of fact, God, that is a very bad idea because perhaps you don't know, but Ahab wants me dead, and Ahab is king, and it's good to be king. So I think I'll just stay right here where I am, where I'm safe, and I have plenty of food and good company, and I'll just ride out the famine. But Elijah didn't do this. He was a much better man than me. Especially in a spiritual sense. You see, whenever God told Elijah to do something, he did it. No questions asked. And because of this, God could bless Elijah. You see, this man was willing and obedient. And because of this, God could bless Elijah. You see, this man was willing and obedient. And when God spoke, he obeyed. When God said, go show yourself to Ahab, Elijah just simply packed up his bags. He left the village of Zarephath and he returned to the land of Israel. Now, my friends, that's the actions of a true believer. A man who does that is not a bystander. That man is aggressively believing. So who's the bystander in the story? Well, it was a man whose name was Obadiah. And Elijah came face to face with this man as he neared Ahab's palace in the city of Samaria. So who was he? Who is this guy, Obadiah? Well, I can tell you now, he's the overseer of Ahab's palace. In other words, this man, Obadiah, lived in the same house with the wicked king and the equally wicked queen. He ate at their table. He directed their servant corps. So we might say that he was living his life in the midst of total godlessness and depravity. It surrounded him day and night. Now, here's what I want us to think about. What does this tell us about this man? Well, it indicates to me that this man had to be a closet believer. The environment in which he chose to live proves it. Right? Now, don't get me wrong. Obadiah believed in Yahweh. He believed that Yahweh alone was God. The Baal was not God. He had already settled that in his mind. And because of this, he feared God mightily. But beloved, let me tell you this. Believing in God and fearing God is not the same thing as being in a personal relationship with God. Did you know that? In fact, I can guarantee you that Obadiah had never told a single soul in that household that he was a follower of Yahweh of Sinai. You see, that would have been too dangerous for him. This could have got him killed. So what he appears to have done was this. He tried to mix with all those idolatrous, immoral people surrounding him, and he tried to avoid calling any attention to himself. Now, I'm not saying that Obadiah wasn't a good man. He was a good man. Did you hear me? He was a good man. He was a moral man. He was a righteous man. That is so much the case that if God had been interested in human works, which he wasn't and isn't, Obadiah would have had the inside track with God. Listen, the truth is this. This guy Obadiah had some really serious good works to present to God. Listen, I could never in all of my life offer to God what this man had to offer. For example, when Jezebel began a campaign to exterminate all of the true prophets of God living in the state of Israel, this man reacted. You know what he did? He put his money where his mouth is. He personally hid 100 of these godly men so that the queen could not find them. And he fed these 100 men out of his own pocket at a time when food was more expensive than it had ever been in the whole history of Israel. Now, you see what I mean when I say he was a good man? He was a good man. So what was the problem? What made him a bystander? Well, the problem with Obadiah was this. He didn't let anybody know about his connection to Israel's God. He was doing his part for God, but he was doing it undercover. The other day, I was coming back from the chapel, heading for Edmond. The Jim Traber show was on. And some lady, whose name was Diane, not you, I would have recognized this Diane. She called in to inform Jim Traber that she hates Tim Tebow. I despise him. The sight of him on TV, I turn this out. I can't stand him. And Traber said, well, why do you feel so passionate and hate, pouring the hate on poor old Tim? And she said, oh, it's just his religion. He's always out there. He's always talking his religion. He's carrying his Bible around. Got that Bible in his hand. He's always talking religion. Got those stupid things on his face with scriptures written on. Just makes me sick out there advertising his brand of Christianity. He said, well, what kind of Christian do you want him to be, Diane? Like Sam Bradford. And he said, well, what kind of Christian is Sam Bradford? Well, he doesn't carry a Bible around. He's not spouting every time they put a mic in his mouth. He's not talking religion. And bless Jim Traber's heart, I almost wrecked my car. Because you know what he said? He said, well, honey, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of the Great Commission? She said, no. He says, it says, go ye into all the world and make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. I turn loose of the wheel. I'm going, yes, Jim. Yes, Jim. He said, listen, Christianity is a faith that has to be talked about. You can't be a closet Christian. Jim Traber. Now, I don't think she's ever met Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford probably talks his faith as much as Tim Tebow. I'm sure he does. But see, here's somebody. The problem is not, you see, with the boy, Tim Tebow, or with the boy, Sam Bradford. It's with the fact that in her heart, She said, I'm a Christian. I have been, and get this, I'm a Christian. I have been, fill it in, going to all my life. You know what? Some people are going to hell in a cab labeled church. Now, don't. Yeah, don't beat me up. Don't wait outside for me. I'm just in no physical shape to fight anybody. But honestly, there are activists, active Christians, and then there are bystanders who never talk their faith. Now, Obadiah had a faith. He just hid it under a bushel. This is why I classify him as a bystander. He lived somewhere between God and the world. That's what a bystander is. He wanted to hold on to God, but he also wanted to hold on to his cushy job at the palace. We don't have to be radical here. And oh yes, one other thing. He also wanted to keep his head. You see, Obadiah reasoned in the way that I might reason in the same circumstance. You see, I know I need two things to get by in this world, and so did Obadiah. I need my head so that I can function. Somebody cuts that off, I'm done. And I need my job to maintain my standard of living. I mean, this enormous salary that you pay me here. That's funny, too, incidentally. You see, I don't want to fall into that bystander thing. I don't want to need a job so much that I compromise the truth. See, that fits you into that category. Now, you see, Obadiah had this problem. His sense of who he was tied to his standard of living, which was tied to the nature of his job. So Obadiah knew that the only way to maintain his standard of living was to soft pedal his faith. And that, beloved, is the classic position of all religious bystanders. Now, let me tell you what happens when a bystander comes into contact with a true believer. There's always the same reaction. What is it? Bystander, true believer, they come together. What happens? The bystander is threatened. Every time. The bystander is always threatened. And on that fateful day, recorded in our text for today, the bystander, Obadiah, came face to face with the truest man of God of that era. And the first thing the true man of God did was this. He challenged the bystander to get off the fence and get involved. In fact, Elijah said to Obadiah, go get King Ahab and bring him to me. Now, the bystander tried to find an excuse to avoid getting involved. He knew that involvement can have cause to consider. In fact, listen to the words of 1 Kings 18:9. So he said, how have I sinned? What bad thing have I done, Elijah? What horrible thing did I get involved in that you are delivering your servant into the hand of Ahab to kill me? All I got to do is go call your name and the messenger's going to die. Oh, man, what a mess, he said. Well, here Obadiah actually accuses the prophet of trying to get him killed. But you see, that wasn't the case, not at all. The sad truth is this. Elijah had a far better chance of dying. If Obadiah went to get Ahab, then Obadiah did. Now, the attitude of Obadiah points to the major difference between all bystanders and all true believers. See, true believers always stand for what they believe, regardless of the cost involved. On the other hand, bystanders appear to be reeds shaken in the wind. Now, as I look around me today, I don't see very many true believers hanging around. So you say, Pastor, how do you separate a true believer from a bystander? Well, let me list seven things that will always separate bystanders from true believers. They'll be on the screen. True believers attend church regularly. It's unusual for them to miss. Bystanders attend when it's convenient. Secondly, true believers teach their children the essentials of the Christian faith. Bystanders trust the teaching of their children to others. Thirdly, true believers share their faith even if it is uncomfortable. Bystanders will share their faith if someone approaches them and asks them about their faith, but here's the problem. No one ever does. They never will, exactly. True believers read the Word of God. Bystanders say they read it, but they don't. True believers show respect to the leaders of the church. Bystanders critique what the leaders do. True believers will do anything the leadership of the church asks them to do. Bystanders will say, I'll pray about it. Oh, by the way, here another one of my favorites is you ask somebody, the pastor asks somebody to do something, says, well, pastor, I just don't think I feel led. And so I used to carry a pencil around in my pocket, and I kept it real sharp. And when they said, I don't think I feel led, I said, here, let me help you feel led. And so, okay, number seven. Is this awful? Say, sit down, preacher. True believers are full of forgiveness and love. Bystanders are full of rules and expectations. There is the difference. Beloved, on all seven of these counts, Obadiah tended to fit into the bystander category. Sure, he served God, but he served him in secret. We might say that Obadiah was an ancient Mossad agent. He was Israel's secret service, always working underneath, doing good things. Just the Mossad, just spying out the country, doing things hidden. But not Elijah. You see, he's the ultimate true believer. He recognized that God uses peculiar people. And one thing you can say about Elijah, this was one of the most peculiar dudes you'd ever want to find anywhere. Now, consider these two texts for a moment. The first is Titus 2:14. Look at this. It talks about the one who gave himself for us. Why? That he might redeem us from every lawless deed and purify for himself his own special people. His own, in some versions of the Bible, it says his own peculiar people, zealous for good works. Then look at the next one, 1 Peter 2:9. Then he says, you are a chosen generation. This is who we are. A chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. His own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his own marvelous light. That's Elijah. That's how he saw himself. As a part of the chosen generation. A part of a royal priesthood. A part of a holy nation. And he understood what most of us do not even want to hear. He knew that the people of God are not often called to fit in. You see, we can't be content with just fitting in because the world in which we live is not ours. We are aliens. We are sojourners here if we're true believers. So Jesus said, what? He said, we are in the world. Can't help that fact. But we are not of the world. So, listen to a powerful verse of Scripture. It's found in 1 Peter 2:11. It said, beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims in this world, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Now, Elijah was that kind of man. Obadiah was not. So here's the question this morning. Which are we? Are we believers? Or are we bystanders? Well, as your pastor, I can tell you that I find myself bystanding. I find myself bystanding as much as I find myself believing. I wish I could stand here and tell you that I'm a paragon of virtue and that you should be just like me. No, for God's sake, don't be like me. Be like Jesus. He's the author and finisher of the faith. Don't look at me. Because like I said, there are times when I talk the talk and don't walk the walk. Hello? Does that shock you? Shouldn't. Why? Because I'm a sinner. I'm saved by grace just like you are. And together we're working to transition out of being observers and bystanders and transitioning into that place where we stand as Elijah stood. That's the question for this morning. Are we bystanders or are we believers? And that's my teaching for this morning.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe too. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Don't forget to connect with Ariel Ministries on Facebook and Instagram and subscribe to our email list at arielministries.com. That's Ariel spelled A-R-I-E-L. We look forward to keeping you updated on upcoming episodes and projects. If you would like to support the missional efforts of Ariel Ministries in Tharaka, Kenya with Each One Feed One, we'd like to remind you that 10% of all donations to Ariel Ministries will support this missional effort. Visit arielministries.com/give for online donations and other methods of giving. To learn more about the Tharaka mission, you can visit arielministries.com/missions. You can also listen to episode 26 for a deeper dive into how our relationship with Each One Feed One and the McCarter family started over 35 years ago, where we are today, and where we're headed in the future.